Back here on the Mighty 690, it is 7:42, and it's time for our green setup program. We are joined by horticulture agent Kenny Donson. Thanks for joining us this morning, Kenny.
Hello, thank you.
All right, so we are in the midst of fair and rodeo season around here, and this is the week for those county fairs.
Absolutely. So it's been going on for a little while now. Some people have already finished their fairs. Good for them. We're in the thick of it over in Wilson and Labette County right now. Montgomery County is about to start up. A lot of these fairs do start their events pretty early. They start style review and baked foods sometimes early. But we got all of our static exhibits done at Labette County Fair over the last 2 days. Wilson County starting up tomorrow, I believe. And then after that, there's Crawford County. You said there's Chautauqua County over this weekend. Montgomery County is basically all of this weekend. And then Crawford County's finishing us off into August. But then, of course, over here, we've got Interstate Fair and Rodeo as well.
That's right. And I know some of those entry deadlines are coming up for Interstate. So I know that folks are probably focused on their county fairs, but you do want to keep track of those deadlines for some of the for the Interstate, too, because, again, some of those important dates are on the way here in a couple days.
Absolutely. So. Almost all the fairs that I cover, I know we have a website with their fair books available, with all their fair dates available. You have a 4-H agent to call. There's a whole fair board association you can call if you're not sure. Try to call someone, but they're probably busy right now.
That's right. They probably are. But what are you helping out with as far as the fairs go?
So I'm setting up a horticulture contest today in Labette County. That's just going to be the plant ID, essentially. Anybody who wants to come out to the inside building, nice cool air conditioning, even though it's a pretty decent day today. I'll be setting up a nice long, lengthy ID for adults and seniors, or adults and senior 4-H'ers. Intermediates get a shorter bit, and then 7 to 9 year olds get a really tiny, hopefully very easy contest. But if you just want to come out and ID some stuff, take your stab at it, you're free to come.
So this is actually where they are telling you what the different plants are.
Yes, I'll prepare about 40 to 50 samples. Good luck with them. However, there's a word bank, so it's not too hard, and you can always narrow it down by each word bank is grouped into flowers and foliage, trees, fruits and nuts, so you can narrow it down pretty well, but it's a lot of plants, and if you're not studied, you might not get them all, and that's okay.
But you can actually get a ribbon for doing this? Can you get anything for this?
Every kid gets a $1 premium, and then I'm not sure what they've decided on the actual award for the top kid or the top five kids, but I know there is one, I think.
Okay. Well, that's great. That's fantastic. So be a good opportunity for you to learn a little bit. And of course, like I said, we've got just so many fairs continuing along here. So hope folks can stop by and take advantage of it. And I know that, there's kind of a whole process of, people, there's the check-in times and then judging, which normally the buildings are going to be closed for during the judging process, right?
They can be. Labette, we've had sign-up sheets for all of the indoor exhibits for conferencing is what either conferencing or consultative judging are the words we use, but just means if you want to actually talk to your judge, sometimes that's for your benefit. Sometimes that's to understand why they gave you the ribbon they gave you, to maybe explain yourself and say, well, this is how I grew it, or I didn't know that this was a problem and that's why I compensated. And sometimes that's really good for judges to know that and factor that into their judging. Sometimes it's just good for you to feel like, hey, I didn't just drop something off and then got a red ribbon. But no matter what, it's a learning experience. So if you have a project that you've been working on, submit it. There's a lot of kids who just have a project that's mostly finished, or they stayed up all night before, and sometimes they do finish, which is great. But it doesn't hurt to try and submit something and try to learn for next year.
Well, and that is a good opportunity if you can actually talk with the judge and get some feedback. Is there usually any written feedback or not? Is it usually just a ribbon?
Up to the judge's choice. And that does depend on, what judge it was, what category it is, how many exhibits sometimes. I know tomorrow I'll be in Wilson County, and I remember last year they had plates upon plates upon plates of food. And I tried to at least give a good job, good uniformity, these tomatoes are well-developed kind of comment.
Sure. So that is all coming up. So a good reminder on that. Finally, just from a judging perspective, if someone is going to be specifically since you're doing horticulture, any tips on folks who are going to be bringing things to the fair?
Absolutely. You mentioned wrapping up, but this might be the longest part. So this goes for both kiddos in 4-H who are enrolled and submitting their 4-H exhibits, but also adults and other kids who are not in 4-H submitting for open class. Always always read your fare book, because your fare book will tell you exactly what classes are in that fare. Some counties have different classes, some move them around. When you check them in, sometimes they'll also help you move them around or place them in the right class. And that can just be as simple as, hey, this is a perennial flower, not an annual flower. And that can also depend on how they're judged against each other or the top ribbons are placed. Always read your fare book, because that's got basically the rules outlined. If you're in 4-H or if you just want some tips, 4-H website, they have all the exhibitor guidelines, which are great to follow because it's all the written information. I always say, you know, a judge is basing it off of kind of their opinion, kind of how they feel and how they look at them that day, but there's literally written guidelines to follow online. If you can get all those or nail as most of them as you can, you know you're doing pretty good, and then it's up to the judge's decision. And that's when it gets into the longer, you know, discussion about, well, is it opinion-based? Are they comparing them? Some judges do say, oh, if this is a 7-year-old who drew this drawing, that's a very good drawing for a 7-year-old, and that, you know, shows skill and effort and practice. Or if you're showing fruits and vegetables or flowers to me, I say, okay, I just, based on what I see, unless you talk to me, I see that you brought in these tomatoes that look good, but maybe one's different sized, maybe one's different colored. And I'm like, okay, well, that's now the bad tomato on the plate. So you're showing me what you wanted to show me. And if that's not well represented, sometimes it knocks you down. As long as you can pick the best looking things to your eye, as long as you know you're getting all the stuff you need to get, sometimes you can harvest things early if your onions aren't ready or something, but as long as you're bringing something that you're pretty proud of, take pride in that and then see what you get.
Very good. So some good advice here as we get into fair time and getting those entries finalized here. And I know that, you know, especially when it comes to horticulture, sometimes you just kind of have to deal with what you got in the garden. You may just pick in the best. But especially this time of year, we start to get into some of that heat stress with some of our plants. And I know you wanted to talk a little bit about that today.
Absolutely. So today, for example, we actually have a pretty good forecast lined up that James has been mentioning, which is amazing. And I personally love it. And anyone at the county fair probably loves it. However, we are going to heat back up, like he said. And so that's why when it's important to think about what we've been seeing in the weather, what we're going to see in the weather, and how plants react to that heat. Most notably, there's a lot of plants that will survive heat. Almost everything that's a summer plant that's usually alive in the summer, things like your garden veggies, things like your trees and shrubs, they'll survive the summer as long as they're not too stressed out. Sometimes a plant that's already weak will get a little heat stress and then kind of crash from there. Things like your tomato plants, things like your porch plants, you might start to see them curling or wilting or looking like they're bad, but usually they'll perk up in the afternoon or the evening or the morning next morning, especially after a good watering. And that's just because plants can take the heat, but sometimes it's just too much all at once and they kind of have to wilt or curl their leaves or try to find some way of surviving that intense heat for a short period. I tell people, as long as the root system's in a pretty decent spot, whether that be in ground, whether that be a potted plant, as long as your plants have well-developed roots, they're nice and healthy, they haven't been, you know, water-starved or overwatered or anything, they should survive the heat well enough. And I have a plant on my porch currently with a black pot, and I think that is also causing some problems because roots are kind of the main insulator, the thing that needs the temperature the most adapted, because especially in a greenhouse setting, if a plant's roots are too cold or too hot, that really affects the health of the whole plant. If the tops, like the leaves, are baking in the sun, they'll wilt, they'll curl, but then the plant will snap out of it when it gets better or in the evening. If the roots are too hot, then the plant starts to really stress out.
Well, that's a good thought, and especially if with a pot, maybe if you put something around it, I don't know, bricks or just something to kind of absorb a little bit more of that heat and help regulate it, I'm sure that might help a little bit.
Yeah. Bricks, other plants, sometimes just mass planting, say my porch plants that are baking in the afternoon sun, they really could just get massed together. And I've tried to do that. We're still testing the results on that one. But just a little bit of shade coverage with other plants, sometimes moving things underneath the tree or nearby where it's out of the sun in the middle of the heat. Things like your lawns, for example, fescue, is not a warm season grass. It's not generally the most heat loving or sun loving. So a lot of times fescues that are already stressed, say there's bad soil, maybe there's been some grub damage, those fescues in the middle of summer, as it gets hot, it gets sunny, they start to really peter out. And then that's kind of normal for fescue anyway, but especially after the roots have already been compromised, then they really can't make it. They do tend to perk back up later. They tend to have to re-green up again.
What about watering? Should we be doing watering in the morning, evening? What's the best thought when we come to some of these hot days?
The recommendation is always to do watering early in the morning and also as close to the root zone as you can. The tops of the plants never need the water, really. The roots always need that water. Early morning is also great because early morning lets the water kind of evaporate and go on throughout the day. Typically, best if it's not on the leaves, because then that causes some sunburn sometimes, but also problems. But at nighttime, say you're watering at nighttime, if you water and the leaves are wet all night long, this is usually a problem in the spring at least, where wet leaves usually lead to mold. Especially if it's wet leaves and it's kind of warm, then the mold and fungus gets really excited in that environment. So watering in the morning, watering at the roots is best. Usually for summer, we recommend like a nice deep soaking, like a nice deep watering consistently, but not every day, maybe. If it's super hot, maybe you crank it up a little more often, but for the most part, most perennials in the landscape, at least, they can use a nice 1 to 2 inch soak, deep soak, once a week, maybe twice a week. Maybe you do it on your Monday and your Wednesday, maybe on the weekend as well. Things like a porch plant or a potted plant or a garden plant, potted plant, they definitely need probably pretty consistent water, if not every other day, sometimes every day if it's hot enough.
What about things like watermelons that are traditionally, you think they're going to use a lot of water?
Yeah, and tomatoes too. Mm-hmm. So there are some things that do need pretty consistent watering. That doesn't always mean wet all the time. That just means they shouldn't dry out too much. They shouldn't get a big surge of water all at once. Those are the things that you'll water a little bit more consistently. Like I said, probably that every other day routine, but depending on how hot it is, how much they're drying out, how much they're sucking up, that's something you water more often.
How do we, now, there are some of those fairs where it's the biggest pumpkin, the biggest watermelon. I'm sure that's a whole subculture in the horticulture.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Where people are, you know, doing all these secret tricks and whatnot.
Absolutely. So one of our newest agent, actually, Ariana, she has her husband is growing giant squash pumpkin vine of some sort. And she called him crazy. And I was not offended. But I did say, hey, I actually have been looking into that stuff too, because it's really cool and exciting. And some people get really into it. And she's like, oh, I guess he's not crazy. But it's really all about genetics. It's all about extremely specific care. They have to make sure the squash or whatever it is on a perfect bed. They can't have too many cracks. They have to lay out the vine specifically. And they do have to give that thing very consistent, very intensive care. And it's crazy, but it's really cool.
Yeah. I mean, you get to some of those state fair records that are like over 1,000 pounds.
Yeah.
I mean, that thing, that's one of those fun hobbies out there, that just to kind of push the boundaries of nature and everything. Mm-hmm. So probably not going to be solving any world hunger problems, but...
No. And usually they're not bred for flavor. They're literally bred for size. And all the genetics are based into how big can this thing get. How big is too big? Because sometimes that's a lot of weight, that's a lot of pressure, that's a lot of ways to go wrong. And I know I've seen a lot of stuff come out in like the Northeast U.S., like the New England-ish area. They tend to do it a lot, I believe, but every state has records that they set. I told my coworker that literally they take big pumpkins, they carve them out, and they boat in them. They'll put motors on them, or they'll do paddle boats. I've seen this in, I think, Maine, and I think Michigan too. I don't know if Kansas does it. If someone does, please call and tell me. Please tell me where that's at, because it sounds awesome to watch.
Oh yeah, that'd be fantastic. So, but anything else as we kind of wrap up our next segment? I know we'll have you around here for our next segment here in the 8 o'clock hour.
That's all I got right now, I believe. And Katie should be coming in to talk to you about maybe fair stuff in the next segment.
Yes, so we'll plan to talk with Katie here in just a few as well as we continue our Green Setup program. But Kenny, if folks do have some of those hoarder culture questions and they want to get a hold of you, what's the best way to do that?
You can call any of our offices, but my home office is 620-331-2690. That's our Independence office, but we all patch the numbers around and we can get you anywhere you need to be. We are kind of busy right now, so just keep that in mind if we're not responding as well as we could.
All right. Well, we appreciate it, Kenny, and we will look forward to continuing our conversation, adding Katie into the mix here as we continue into the 8 o'clock hour. You're listening to the Mighty 690, 71 degrees as we head towards 8 o'clock.
Good morning. This is Katie Zwolland. We are back from our Greenside Upside program with Katie Townsman. Good morning, Katie.
Good morning.
How's it going?
It is going well. Like Kenny mentioned, it is fair week, so of course it is hot outside, but we're surviving okay, and it is supposed to cool off for some of the other fairs here towards the tail end of the week, so we're looking forward to that.
I know. I've been to the fair Monday and Tuesday, and it was pretty hot, but you know what? Like, it's always nice seeing the kids out there with their projects and stuff, so...
Yes, and inside the building, I was checking out some of the horticulture and flower projects, and I thought that maybe I would talk a little bit about harvesting pumpkins today. I did not see any pumpkins at the Labette County Fair, but I know that there's usually one or two at the Montgomery County Fair up in Independence here at the tail end of the week.
All right. Well, you want to get talking about pumpkins and stuff?
Yeah. So the main reason I thought about this topic was I have a pumpkin at my house that is almost ready to harvest. And so that's super early, but it is one of those that I took out and I threw at the edge of my yard at the end of last year when it had rotted, hoping for some volunteer pumpkins. And it worked, and I have some. The only problem is that now they're almost ready. And so what do you do with your pumpkins when they are ready to harvest? So when that vine starts to dry out, you can go ahead and pick those. And kind of like digging the potatoes in your garden, they need to cure. And so if you can set them out of the sun, like potatoes, after you dig them, that everything needs to be out of the sun, but if you can let them out in 70 to 80 degree temperatures, so, you know, a back porch area, underneath your porch, even outside, and let those things go ahead and cure and really dry up before you put them away. And then, very similar to potatoes, if you can put them in a cellar or a basement, somewhere that's going to be dark and cool, you're going to be able to preserve those pumpkins and even potatoes for a later time down the road. I definitely need to do that. I am not a person that starts decorating for fall in August. I know some people do, but that's, my kiddos would tear pumpkins up if I went ahead and put them out that early or want to go ahead and carve them. So we are going to harvest ours and try to find somewhere cool to put it.
That's awesome. I like I said, as a kid, I always loved going to pumpkin patches and stuff and seeing all the pumpkins. But, yeah, I didn't realize that people plant pumpkins so early, though. I don't know what I was thinking.
Yeah, so they're about 90 days to harvest. And so those came up super early because they were just volunteers. And so, but the ones that I actually planted, like in my garden bed, they're not ready just yet. I planted them at the end of June, and so I'm hoping for a harvest at the end of September, beginning of October. So those are going to be a little bit more timely, but these volunteers definitely got a jump on everything, and we didn't have much of a late frost or anything like that this year, and so they really just took off there at the edge of the yard, especially with all the rainfall that we got this spring.
And also, Katie, are these pumpkins, are they like the big orange pumpkins, or are they like the other ones?
So, luckily, this one was a white plant. which I wasn't sure that it would take off, but my volunteer one is a white pumpkin. We have some of the little bitty miniature ones planted in the garden. I have never had a lot of luck with the big jumbo pumpkins, so I kind of gave up on those. But those are always really fun to see, like at the state fair, when you can see the pumpkins that weigh several hundred pounds to 1,000 pounds. But no, we're definitely not trying anything like that.
Well, Katie, yeah, anything else that you would like to talk about with pumpkins or anything?
No, I mean, if you guys want to come out, and I know you guys are coming to the fair, so that's awesome. But we would encourage the public, like Kenny talked about, to come out and see all the kids' exhibits at the fairs. For Wildcat Extension District, we have 3 fairs going on this week, Labette County, Montgomery County, and Wilson County. And so we have a lot of overlap, but a lot of good stuff. And then we'll also do Crawford County Fair here in a few weeks, and then Interstate Fair in Coffeyville. So you'll be able to see our kids' stuff at a lot of places.
It's very busy time of year, isn't it?
Yes, it is a busy time of year. And everybody's enjoying the weather and spending a lot of family time. So we really like this time of year.
Awesome. Well, let's see here. Anything else that you'd like to say about the fair?
Well, I do have one more thing since we have a few more minutes of time here. I had on my list also to talk briefly about gourds, because also this year in my garden, I tried to grow these loofah gourds. So they're a type of gourd that when they grow, they look kind of like a cucumber. And then when they dry out, you can use them in the kitchen or in the bathroom as like a scrubby. And so that is very cool, and I'm looking forward to harvesting those. They're still green right now, and this is my first year growing them. But gourds, it's the same process as pumpkins. They need a place to dry out, and they will, once they're cured, will last a really long time. Somebody had given me seeds from their crop last year, and so I didn't buy seeds. These are just when I harvested the gourds last year, I dried out the seeds and planted them this year. So there's a lot of really cool things that you can do in the pumpkin gourd area. My neighbor lady also grew gourds and then hollowed them out, the hard ones, to make bird houses and then gave them away as a gift. So it's just a really fun season for pumpkins and gourds, and we don't think about them right now. We think about them more in the fall, but they are actively growing right now and are starting to dry out.
Are they, like, in the same family, like gourds and pumpkins, I'm guessing?
Well, that you'd have to ask Kenny. I am definitely no expert. I just got a little bit excited about gourds and pumpkins this week, so I thought that's what I would talk about on the radio. But, yeah, if somebody had technical questions about how to grow the things that I'm talking about, we would definitely have to get Kenny back on the phone. I know he had to take off to go get some plant samples, but if you called the office, Kenny could answer all your pumpkin and gourd questions.
All right. Well, Katie, I appreciate you coming on this morning, and it's always nice talking to you guys, and I hope that fair week goes smoothly for you guys.
Thank you. Yes, we're going to try to beat the heat and stay cool. And like some of the kids told me yesterday, this is their favorite time of year because they just get to be with their friends at the fair. So we're so excited for them.
Yes, it was always like fair week was always like in the summer, that was the week I was always looking forward to. So,
yes.
Well, Katie, you have a wonderful day, and thank you.
Thank you. Bye.
All right, bye-bye.